Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. Well, today is Fabulous Friday with Dr. Judy Jasek, and we're going to answer your questions. Oh, my gosh. Dr. Jasek, we have so many questions to answer today. Are you ready for them?
I'm ready. Let's do it. I'm even all warmed up because they didn't ask me anything with dogs naturally last night.
So. Oh, you did? What'd you get asked?
All kinds of stuff. Always. Well, people ask, you know, a lot of cancer questions because they know that I do a lot of work with cancer patients. So I get a lot of that. They'll ask about some supplements. You know, it's a pretty aware group, you know, but you know, a lot of the answers are the same. Stop feeding kibble, stop doing vaccines. And, you know, we were talking earlier about toxins and, you know, just if you stop poisoning your pet, and don't over supplement. Oh, we talked about elevated liver enzymes. That was another thing. Like, stop the supplements, anything that's not medically necessary, and get on a fresh food diet and see if those enzymes come down. And most of the time they will. So, yeah. You know, same old stuff.
Man, I see some crappy supplements out there. People send me their stuff all the time. You know, dogs are having problems. And I'm like, you know, this has bacon flavoring in it and it has all of this stuff, or I'll see people doing dental sticks. And most of this crap that's coming off of chewy.com is not good. I'm sorry. It's just not. I don't see anything good there most of the time.
Yeah, no, they're not. I mean, you got to know what you're buying. I mean, they just sell to sell. You know, you got to watch your products.
Well, so there was an article that came out, Dr. Jasek, and we want to address this because it, again, is the way that a narrative is shaped and the information that is not provided and the other side of the story that's not told that sends people down a freaking rabbit hole. As I did a podcast earlier in the week on the whole grains, you need grains, or, you know, has to be grain free, and then you need grains and all that kind of stuff. Where did all that information come from? And you really look at it, and it was just the pet food companies moving the masses to do what they needed them to do, and then paying three vets to write articles and to organize their studies so that it would be biased in one way, right? We see it all the time. Mm-hmm. Now there is this article that says dogs fed a raw meat diet may spread antibiotic resistant bacteria. Okay. I sent you this article. I sent it to Dr. Andy and Neely, and everybody's looking at this. And really, well, before I say anything more, give me your interpretation of what you read in this, not your interpretation. What the heck did you think about this article?
Well, it's like you were saying before, like so much, you know, information and research comes out there. It's so easy to like punch holes. So first of all, one of my questions was, well, how did they get this information? How did they perform this? You know, and there was a lot of like mays and shoulds and a lot of like not very definitive statements in there too, but all they have to do is plant the seed. They're not presenting anything definitive. They're just saying, yeah, dogs with, you know, raw feet that eat raw are more likely to spread antibiotic resistant bacteria. So how are they testing that? They're collecting the poop. Did they do a study, collect the poop and test to make sure that, you know, the bacteria were truly antibiotic resistant? And is it to all antibiotics or some antibiotics or one I mean, they could culture a bacteria and show it's resistant to one antibiotic and make that statement. It's antibiotic resistant. It might be susceptible to 10 others, but it's resistant to one. So they can make that statement. So I could punch a a lot of holes in that. Plus, it doesn't make any sense. What's the link between raw food and these antibiotic resistant bacteria? The raw food automatically now has antibiotic resistant bacteria. Why does raw food have more antibiotic resistant bacteria? Because I bet if they cultured a bag of kibble, they culture all kinds of crap, probably including antibiotic resistant bacteria.
So this is what's really interesting about this article. And as you say, planting the seed for more things to come. So today I was listening to this morning, Polly and Mary, who are on Children's Health Defense. They have a podcast. Mm-hmm. And here's what they were talking about. They were saying that, and to give a little background to that organization, they've been studying vaccines forever. And they watched the pharmaceutical industry intensely, that the pharmaceutical industry is no longer making money on antibiotics. As a matter of fact, they're starting to stop manufacturing many of the antibiotics, because now what do they have? They have vaccines that are going to take the place of antibiotics and antibiotic resistant strains.
I listened to that very same podcast this morning. It's so funny.
You?
Great minds think alike. But yeah, I thought that was really interesting too. Oh, and another thing they said, I think Polly said she had a friend that, you know, needed antibiotics for one of her kids, mm-hmm. and she had to drive to like 5 different pharmacies. They're stopping making them because they want you to get a vaccine, which, I mean, I'm not in favor of vaccines anyway, but that whole concept, you're going to take a vaccine to protect you against antibiotic resistant bacteria. It doesn't even make any sense because there's a whole bunch of bacteria. Is it protecting you against certain specific bacteria? Because it's not just like there's just bacteria and one vaccine is going to protect you against any antibiotic resistant bacteria. I mean, the whole concept doesn't make any sense, except from the perspective of they get to sell more vaccines and scare people.
Well, and what they said, and I'm sure you heard this, was, okay, let's knock out the immune system with the antibiotics that we have been giving, right? And then let's come in with the vaccine that's going to further hurt your immune system. And, you know, we've been talking for a long time about the people who have said, I need my vaccine because I'm immune compromised. And I was so excited that they confirmed what we've been saying as well. They're like, that doesn't make any sense. You're further taking down and weakening your immune system. So that narrative is just totally backwards.
And I do the exact opposite in pets. I mean, I don't like to vaccinate anyway, but I certainly would not vaccinate a pet that had a compromised immune system.
Yeah. So this is, and then when I watched pet food industry, they're already talking about how do we add acidifiers to food, because they are coming on strong with supposedly, you know, quote unquote, raw food. And it's just going to be sterile and it's still going to have crap in it. But this is what they're going to do. They're going to scare people away from the real raw food that doesn't have any, you know, additives to it, that is pure and that is the natural way that dogs eat and cats eat. And they're going to sell this crap because they're coming on with the fear. So I hope that people will take a deeper dive into all propaganda, all information.
The other thing, you know, the other question to ask that I ask, well, where are these antibiotic resistant bacteria coming from? They'd like you to believe they're just magically appearing in raw food, just like out of nowhere. The biggest source of antibiotic resistant bacteria is in animal husbandry, because they treat like the factory farmed, you know, so not responsibly raised animals. They are fed antibiotics every day in their food. And when you're, and it's this like kind of low level, and that's like the perfect recipe for building antibiotic resistance, is this low level of antibiotics, because it's not enough to kill like a particular bacteria. It kind of keeps the populations under control so that the animals continue to gain weight. That's the whole name of the game in a feedlot. They just want them fat and as heavy as possible when they go to slaughter, because then they get more money for them.
Right.
And so they find that these low levels of antibiotics keep the animals from getting a serious infection, but then there's no side effects. Well, this just gives these bacteria all this time, months, you know, however many months that they're feeding out these animals in the feedlot, to become resistant to them and survive it. That's where they come. And they're overused in medicine too, no doubt. But I think I've heard something like 60% of antibiotics are used in the food industry, not in medicine, like prescribed for, you know, a sinus infection or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to go back and listen to that podcast again with Mary and Polly, because they were talking about that in that podcast, about what they're doing to the food industry in regards to antibiotic resistant bacteria.
Yeah. So, yeah. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I like that show because, you know, it's like, who do you trust for news and where can you get like a bunch of news fast? And they kind of like whip through like a bunch of like pertinent headlines of the week. Cause I don't trust mainstream media and like,
Oh, come on, Dr. Jasek.
Yeah.
So cynical.
Oh yeah. I'm just one of those let me put my tinfoil hat on. Okay. There we go. Now I can be a true conspiracy theorist. Yeah. But I like shows like that they just kind of whip through like some important headlines of the week and make a comment or two and move on. They're good. Polly Tommy's interesting. She's a real firecracker.
So what you do is, if you want to go to childrenshealthdefense.org, scroll down and you will see the podcast there with this week with Mary and Polly. So that's a good one. That is good.
Yeah. Financial Rebellion was really good too. They talked about just some really practical ways to get prepared and like protecting your money, like not having all your money in the bank, and some different things that you can do if, you know, well, not if, when times get tougher. And, you know, if you're having a hard time getting food, you know, practical ways to get prepared for hard times that might be coming. I thought it was a really good show, just very good practical suggestions that anybody can do. So that was Financial Rebellion. That's another good one.
Yeah. And I will say that we are seeing people get very proactive, buying the food and then putting them in the freeze dryers. And you can do probably 10, 20 pounds a day. So try that out, get going. You know, I'm not saying that the freeze dryers are cheap. They're not, but you know, if money's not going to be worth anything, you might as well spend it now. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. It's
on everything, including dog food.
That's right. All right. So we want to say hello to Wendy Sculio. I hope I haven't butchered her name, but she's from Shady Run Labradors out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. She listens to our podcast, but she was saying that she sent her dog. I think her mom lost her dog during COVID. So one of their dogs went over with her mom, and she said, unfortunately, you know, mom's not been feeding her the right way. And now she has an enlarged heart. Now that's all the information I have. What do you do about a dog with an enlarged heart? Certainly we want to get them off of crap food. We don't want to vaccinate them. You have any other suggestions for enlarged heart dogs?
Well, I mean, it would depend too on like why the heart is enlarged. Like there's different types of cardiomyopathy that'll cause heart enlargement. Anytime the heart is not functioning optimally, it'll get larger because the heart's a muscle. And if there's something functionally not going right, it has to work harder. And when muscles work harder, they get bigger. And that's how we get heart enlargement. So it would, I mean, I really do like getting echoes done, because when they do an echocardiogram, and this is something, you know, you should have done by a cardiologist so that they have that level of expertise and they look at the heart functionally. You know, I think you can get so much information from an echo that you can't get on x-ray. X-ray, you can kind of look at size and shape of the heart, but the echo will tell you functionally what's going on with the heart. And this will tell you how severe it is. Cause you can say, oh, I hear a heart murmur, or there's a little, you know, a heart enlargement, but is the heart still able to do its job? And sometimes it is. I mean, I've seen some, I'll hear a heart murmur and I'll recommend an echo and people will go in and get that done. And sometimes they'll come back and say, yeah, there's a murmur, but the heart's still able to do its job. We don't need to do any meds. Or sometimes they do recommend some cardiac medication. So I think getting that evaluation is a good idea. Nutrition is huge. I've seen dogs come from rescues on, you know, not very good diets because that's all that they could feed them, and with heart murmurs, and change them to a raw diet, and the heart murmurs will diminish, and I've even seen them go away. And this is just because of proper nutrition. You know, you hear a lot about taurine and the heart, and that is a real essential nutrient. Well, the best source of taurine is fresh meat and fresh organs. So if you're on a raw diet, you're going to be covered nutritionally. So that's important. Another real simple thing that I usually recommend people start on is hawthorn berry. And you can get these tinctures on the human side. They're pretty easy to find. Hawthorn berry is very supportive of heart muscle function. It can actually help the heart muscle to heal. And there's other herbs. There's some Chinese herbal blends and other things that can help the heart muscle heal too. But I think finding out how well the heart is doing functionally is an important step.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank you so much to Wendy for listening to the podcast. We hope that helps. Now, Michelle Yagowski, she's an ICU nurse in the UK out in Glasgow. She's been accepted into animal nutrition program at the University of Glasgow in the UK. She said, my thought process was that the UK vets seem to care about their pets' nutrition more than the average US vet. I was hoping to learn something. I'm also debating on going for my DVM as well. She said, I, like everyone else, had a sick dog who was prescribed too many antibiotics, and the only thing that fixed his gut was raw. I've been sold ever since, and I'll never feed anything different. She said, my question is, do you have any associations or credentialing that you recommend? And I'm not sure if she means in pet nutrition or for a DVM, but I'm thinking she means pet nutrition.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't found a nutrition program like a one that actually gives you some sort of certificate, that, you know, that I've liked or that I've agreed with the way they feed, because most of them still do recommend a lot of grains and carbs and potatoes and these high starchy ingredients. I know, like, I think Dogs Naturally magazine they have a raw one. I'm not that familiar with that course, but I imagine that that's probably quite a bit better, but I can't speak to that specifically.
Yeah. I think everyone feels like they've got to have some sort of a credential, right? And what I see is that experience, and research, and working with dogs on a daily basis and multiple dogs, and surrounding yourself with people that are in the industry that you want to be a part of, right? So if you want to be a part of a holistic industry, then you would, you know, listen to this podcast. You would listen to a Rita Hogan podcast. You would listen to, you would look at Dogs Naturally, start there. And really, I don't think that the certifications are all that big of a deal. It's really, I mean, Neely has a million certifications. She really does. But she doesn't ever put those by her name. She doesn't list them all out, or it'd be a page long, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just really getting that experience. So just start somewhere, at least start with Dogs Naturally, I would say.
Yeah. And I think there's no substitute for experience. No. You know, because you could go, I mean, in my opinion, somebody could go do some great course, but if they haven't used it out in the real world, they're not going to have the most important knowledge base, because there's always going to be individual variation with diets. There's never going to be a one size fits all. So you can start with some basic concepts, but then you have to be able to interpret what's going on with the pet. And that just takes experience. And I don't think, I agree with you 100%. I don't think it's about any particular credential. Even in, as a veterinarian, you know, really that license that I got way back when, I mean, that allowed me to go out and do this stuff and practice, as we call it practice. But the most of the learning, the most important learning has been on my own out in the real world, not in textbooks.
Right. Absolutely. And then doing research from there even more. And you look at some of these, Dr. Jasek, these cardiologists who forever and a day were saying, oh, yes, your dog has dilated cardiomyopathy because he's not getting grains.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ridiculous. Don't ever listen to that from a cardiologist.
And you're just like, okay, you have a degree, you have this, you know, and you're paying what, I don't know, $750 to go see a cardiologist. And they're telling you that sort of crap. So, I mean, yeah, you gotta get out there and really get some experience. Yeah. It's just experience, experience, experience. And, we hope you take us on your journey with you, Michelle. All right. So here's a question from Amber. Amber said, hey, you didn't answer my questions last week. I said,
sorry, Amber.
All right. So Amber's been doing no-sods with her puppy, Kaya. Mm-hmm. And this is a no-sod that her vet made up for her. It was made parvo and distemper no-sod. But she got her titers, and the only positive titer was for the parvo. The distemper was not high enough. So she wanted to know, what is the level in a titer that would be okay for protection for distemper?
Well, that's going to vary a little bit with the lab. And just another comment about the no-sods is you don't always get a measurable titer level using no-sods like you would with a conventional vaccine. You don't always see that. So that even though there's not a high enough titer, the pet could still be protected with the no-sods. But I think it depends on the lab. Like we send ours to Kansas State where they actually measure them. Now there are some like tests that are more subjective that can be done in clinics where it's just more of a range, like they're high, medium, or low, like that type of thing. But I think in the, like from Kansas State, I think 32 is the kind of lower limit for distemper. And I think it's like 80 for parvo. I'd have to look it up and look at the units, but it says from Kansas State, it says very, very clearly on the form what, like when you get the results reported, what levels they recommend. Now, you know, some people, I think Gene Dodds has even said this, that if you have any level of antibodies at all, you could still have some protection, you know, with a challenge. But the lab does give you kind of a range as to where you would want to see the titer levels. But I have seen in dogs that don't have any conventional vaccines at all, and they're just on the no-sods, they may not get a measurable titer level.
Okay. So would you say that the dog is still protected?
I would say it's protected by the no-sods. Yeah. She's continuing to do the no-sods. I would continue that. You know, a lot of that is, you know, how comfortable the person is with that. Myself, I'd be perfectly comfortable just putting a puppy on no-sods and not doing any conventional vaccines. Matter of fact, that would be exactly what I do if I had a puppy. Because I think they are protective. And I think that the conventional vaccines just do way more harm than good. They, you know, as far as inflaming the body and causing other problems. So, when I tell people this, if they want to do no-sods instead of a vaccine, you may not get a measurable antibody level because they act differently in the body.
Okay. So that was her question. She was going to do more distemper, but wondering if it was really necessary. So in the no-sods, you're not going to overdo it.
No. No-sods are super safe.
Okay. Her other question is, have you ever seen a dog that gets a little bit of diarrhea and vomiting as they are teething, like a 4-month-old puppy? Mm-hmm.
I I have seen that. I mean, you know, like a puppy can get vomiting and diarrhea for lots of reasons. So is it caused by the teething? But I have seen that around the time that, you know, that they're teething and they might just be a little uncomfortable. It's anytime there's a stress on the body or it's a little painful for them to eat. I think you could get a little vomiting or diarrhea, or they swallow teeth, or sometimes the gums will bleed and they'll swallow some of that blood and that's irritating to the stomach. So, I mean, I think it should be pretty mild if it's just due to the teething.
Gotcha. And then our last question is, and we've covered this many times, but it's about butt scooting. And so Amber has been expressing the anal glands. We talked about that. That's probably not a good thing. She said, should she stop expressing the anal glands, even if her dog is butt scooting?
Well, I guess my question would be, is she finding anything abnormal in the anal glands? I mean, if she's not.
Like what? Sphincter smut?
Goo.
Sphincter goo.
Thick goo. So the normal discharge that comes out of anal glands should be pretty liquidy and kind of a creamy color. If it's thick, dark, pasty, that could be a sign that the dog isn't getting them expressed regularly on their own. And so then a dog like that might benefit from having them expressed regularly. If the dog is scooting and you're getting just this normal liquidy, you know, debris out of the anal glands, then probably some sort of sensitivity or some other cause for the inflammation is in play. Like I've seen dogs like with itchy skin or, you know, environmental allergies or things like that. Sometimes their butts just itch and they scoop because
sometimes my butt itches.
Sometimes, you know? Sometimes you just, you know, maybe if people could scoop their sphincters, we would. I don't know.
Okay, Amber, we hope we have answered your questions this week. All right, next we have Dana. Dana, oh, she sent me a picture of this dog, this sweet dog, poor dog. He's a primarily white dog with some black spots. Mm-hmm. And he's got skin issues. So poor Dana's got this dog wrapped in a thunder shirt and a cone on his head. Not mm-hmm. much of a life for a dog. Because he has these skin issues. Okay. So here's the problem that I see. So I said, Dana, I got to know everything that's going into this dog. All right. So he is, I believe, 10 years old, and he was mostly on kibble, and he's been on raw for the last 7 months. But here's the problem that I see, Dana, that we talked about. You're doing raw food, and that's great, but you're also doing signature kibble as treats. Mm-hmm. Okay. And even though, and I hear this a lot, people will say, well, I'm just giving a little bit. Well, a little bit can really set off a problem in those dogs. He's also getting a dental stick a day. And I've taken a look at that. Not good at all. And those are whimsies. Those are not good. Also, he's getting Wild Weenies grass-fed lamb recipe from Stella and Chewy's. Now, I looked at this. Doesn't have a whole lot of ingredients, but if this dog's inflamed, I'm thinking lamb is probably not the thing you want to do. So it also has, okay, so that was fine. But I probably would pull the lamb out. I'd probably just pull all this stuff out until I figured out what was going on with this dog. There's another thing that he's getting, Earthborn Holistic Earth Bites peanut flavor. Mm. No, absolutely not. That has got to go away. Now, Dr. Jasek, she's got this dog on a lot of different medications, and these are just, oh gosh. All right. So he is taking Claritin, and I said, I'm not sure that I would do Claritin for a dog. I wanted to ask you about that. I'd probably move over to Quercetin. I think she did do Quercetin, but ran out, and the vet said to get Claritin. What do you think about Claritin for a dog?
Well, Claritin is an antihistamine. And so, and as a general rule, I don't find antihistamines to be very effective in dogs, like for itching. I mean, some people will give a little Benadryl to make a dog sleepy on a car ride or something like that. that might be a more effective use. For like itchiness, I really don't see it being very effective. And it's a, you know, it's a pharmaceutical. Something like quercetin is more of a natural supplement, and it actually helps stabilize mast cells, which are part of this, you know, itchy, you know, skin sensitivity process. And so the quercetin can really help. I also recommend a nettles tincture, which can help. Nettles and quercetin together can sometimes help calm some things down. But the Claritin or any of the conventional antihistamines, I don't recommend them unless, you know, they don't really tend to work that well. And if, you know, if on a particular dog, they just really do help and give some relief to the situation, then, you know, maybe okay, but I would avoid them if at all possible.
Okay. So the other thing that this dog is taking, and again, these are by most of these are Solaray, the brand Solaray, Slippery Elm, Podiarco, Milk Thistle, a triglyceride omega. And that looks like it's it. So I don't know. She did call and take out the beef out of the diet because she said, well, I heard that it could be beef. And so, you know, I always have to ask that question, what else? And so this is one of those pet parents that's about at their wit's end, right? So they're kind of throwing the kitchen sink at it. But I said, listen, anytime I hear this, I'm always looking and saying, what else is going into the body? So she said, all right, no dental sticks, no processed treats, move away from these supplements, right? And then she is going to just feed turkey and see if that calms it down. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree, you know, first up is getting that crap out of the routine. And I also agree with what you said that even a little bit, if like something they're feeding, like one of these kibbles or some of these biscuit treats or these dental sticks, like these dental chews out there are the worst. You read the ingredients on those things and they're horrific. Give them a bully stick or a tendon or a chicken neck or something. Don't give them those god-awful dental sticks. They're horrible. And so if there's even one ingredient in any of these products that dog is sensitive to, or that's, you know, causing some gut inflammation, I think usually what happens is there's something in one of these products that irritates the gut. We get a leaky gut, and then we get these food molecules are absorbed into the bloodstream that cause the inflammation. I've said this before, I really don't think true food allergies are all that common. So you have to get all this crap out of the diet, really clean, just right down. And the singular herbs like your slippery elm for a little bit of diarrhea probably isn't going to do any harm, but, you know, do we need to be giving that an ongoing basis? Things like that, I usually say, just use, you know, when we have a loose stool or something like that. But I would get as many things out of the routine as possible, just get down to that real basic raw diet. And then probably adding in some, you know, maybe some more gut support, a leaky gut protocol or something like that to help heal the gut. And, you know, and then we go, you know, can go another layer and do, you know, I do Chinese herbs and different things like that to help calm things down too.
Yeah. Yeah. I really feel for this parent because this poor dog, he can't live in a thunder shirt and a cone. No. I mean, that's just, especially, you know, I don't know where Dana lives, but, you know, there's a lot of states that are just like super hot right now, even Colorado, if you're down in the Denver area. So yeah, that's, I hope that she can get some help with this dog. And certainly Dana, if you're listening, I would go over and work with Dr. Jasek. But I said to her, I said, let's just get, you know, for 2 weeks. And even if I don't think, Dr. Jasek, that it's a beef issue, I think it helps for the pet parents to at least move away from that thing that they think it is so that they won't keep, you know, wondering and try it out.
I think it's worth a try. I mean, I still think that a lot of this comes down to a gut issue, but I will say, you know, people do experience that pets will do better on one protein over another, especially when we're dealing with some kind of chronic inflammation like this. You know, something's really off in the body. And for whatever reason, like I'm not sure exactly what the reason is in most cases, but we'll find that they'll just do better on a certain protein. So feed them that protein. You know, I tell people feed them what the dog is thriving on and they're doing the best on, but continue to revisit the other proteins, because the longer, you know, they're on a raw diet. So especially, you know, dog that's newer to raw, or you've just eliminated all these other ingredients, the digestion is going to continue to get stronger. And over time, you almost always can then start to introduce some of those other proteins and just do it in a small amount. If they like do really well on turkey and you want to try some beef, we don't have to give a whole meal of beef. Just add a little beef in, see how they like it, how they do on it. And usually I find that over time, if you keep introducing, you know, the different proteins, the digestion gets stronger and they can handle them just fine.
And she said, well, my dog is due for rabies. I said, if you go in and get a rabies shot right now, you're going to send that dog into the, you know, scratchy hemisphere. But I said, you know, the dog's not well. If a dog's inflamed at that point, that much, then we cannot do, and they shouldn't do. And all vets should be aware of that, but you and I know that doesn't happen. So I said, please go see Dr. Jasek, and she can write you a note for that, because this would not be smart. This would not be healthy for your dog. All right. So the next issue I have is coming from, and I did see pictures, a pet owner whose dog is twice the weight it should be.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah. It should be 20 pounds. It's 40. And so she sent me over the blood work, and it, you know, there are some, the bun is high, not high, it's slightly out of the range, which is pretty normal for raw fed dogs. But I'm like, you know what, when I see a dog that fat, they're going to check him for, you know, hyperthyroidism and that sort of thing. And her other dog is fine. You know, it's in good shape. So again, we do need to weigh out the food. I don't know that she's actually feeding our food. I think the fat content in the food that she's feeding is 11%. So that's pretty basic. Mm-hmm. But what do you see as the main culprit of fat dogs, other than feeding donuts every day like kibble?
Right. That's kibble, you know, those processed carbs, but also the other treats. So we need to be sure there's no biscuit type treats or these, you know, dental sticks, any kind of processed carbohydrate, you know, tends to put the fluff on them. So we say, and then, you know, certainly if like they're doing just everything right and they're not on any processed carbs and they're feeding an appropriate amount and they're not cheating, then, you know, checking thyroid, I think that is valid. I've seen, you know, probably just a couple dogs over time that just really have a hard time keeping their weight down. And it's been hard to figure out why, even on the raw, almost always on raw, because they're off of all those processed carbs, they maintain a lean body weight really, really well. So, you know, but checking, you know, if they're doing everything right, you know, checking endocrine function, checking the thyroid, you know, is the dog getting enough exercise? Because muscle will burn more fuel than fat will. And so if you know, getting your dog out, if they're able to exercise, build up more muscle mass, that's just going to naturally increase their metabolism as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you can have Dr. Judy Jasek take a look at your blood work and get some advice from her over at ahavet.com. But yeah, little mini Aussie. You know, I was right. Walking, I took Asta outside this morning. I said, hey, girl, yeah, we got to pull you back a little bit. Because anytime that you know, and she's going to be 14. You've been working on her hips and, you know, that knee, and she goes to Dr. Andy. And there are times when in her bowl, and I'm not kidding you, I can just put one extra ounce. But over a week for a dog that is a senior dog that really does not do much, that will put the weight on him. So I'm constantly adjusting, and there's not a problem with constantly adjusting. So she's going to go back to her 10 ounces a meal. And in a week and a half, she'll be right back down to where I'm thinking, well, maybe you're a little too skinny. You know what I'm saying? So it just goes back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it does vary, you know, and it varies with, you know, activity in the season, you know, summertime, a lot of times dogs are more active because the people are more active. So they're out doing more things. The days are longer, and yeah, it is going to vary. And it varies with age too. You know, one thing I see really commonly is in puppies that get to be like 10 to 12 months old. So their growth is slowing down, and they come in, all of a sudden they're getting a little chunky. And I'll ask people like, well, what are you feeding them? And they're still feeding them at like a higher, you know, growth rate, you know, food amount for growth. I'd be like, yeah, I think it's time to taper back a little bit. So you want to watch these dogs as they start to get closer to their adult size and weight. And if they start getting a little bit heavy, then it's time to cut back. I have quite a few people come in and say, you know, they'll have like a 10 or 11 month old dog, and they're just like, not so hungry. They're just losing interest in food. And I ask how much they're feeding, and they're feeding, you know, 3, 4, 5% of the dog's body weight because they're feeding a growing puppy. I'm like, yeah, you just need to cut back on that. The dog isn't getting hungry enough. You're just feeding them more than their body needs. So they're just not as interested. Let them get a little hungrier in between meals. And we still want to keep them on the lean side because those bones and joints are still growing and developing. So you do want to watch that. I think that's a real important transition to get, you know, start dropping off the food when they get closer to a year old. And like you said, saves on the food bill too.
That's right. Absolutely. All right. Our last question today is coming from Valerie. Valerie's one of our dear, dear customers. She's just a wonderful, wonderful woman. So Valerie has Astro, who is the 11th dog that has been enrolled in the Morris Animal Foundation Lifetime Study. So she does have extensive blood work and lifestyle information on this particular dog. This particular dog just had its spleen removed. And the reason that she emailed me was because she wanted to make sure, well, he's been raw fed. Okay, he's been raw fed. And they're love the raw food. It's done well. But there is an article out of Dogs Naturally, and it's written by Rita Hogan, canine herbalist, who said some dogs who have had their spleens removed do not do well on a raw fed diet, and that they are more susceptible to bacteria. And so that was the biggest question that she had, was what should she do? Should she continue to do raw to see if her dog does well? Should she go to freeze dried? She's tried that before. The dog doesn't really like freeze dried food. Should she slightly cook it? What would be your advice on that particular issue?
Well, you know, I think this goes back to this fundamental thing, like, is raw food actually contaminated with harmful bacteria? And I think, you know, well-sourced blends like from Raw Dog Food and Company, the answer would be no. But I think a well-sourced raw food blend, there shouldn't be harmful bacteria in there. And I think of the spleen as sort of like a backup organ. You know, it does, like, you know, if there's blood loss, the spleen can contract and can help supply more red blood cells. And I think it does help give the immune system a boost. But I see a lot of dogs that have had splenectomies because, you know, we treat a lot of cancer patients, and I don't ever take them off of the raw, but we do a lot of immune support too. So we're doing things like, you know, the mushrooms and the, you know, CBD and the algae and, you know, these little things, you know, maybe some of the, what's that supplement? It's Red Rover, the one with the berries in it, you know, a little extra antioxidant, you know, these little whole food supplements that can help build up a healthy immune system so that it's not as likely to need that backup of the spleen. Because I've seen, I would say, by far the majority of the patients we see that have had spleens out on our program do quite well, unless, you know, the cancer ends up showing up elsewhere at some point or something else happens. But I would say just in terms of keeping the immune system healthy, I think the raw food is actually the best way to do that because it's, you know, species appropriate. It's good, fresh nutrition, and you're giving them the nutrients that their body needs. And then you, you know, do a few other little, little boosts to keep the immune system strong. And that's usually what I recommend. I wouldn't stop the raw.
Yeah. I think, you know, it is, if you read that article from Rita, I mean, when you look at taking your dog's spleen out, you know, what are the, conditions after you take that spleen out, it scares you to death. It's like, you know, malabsorption, nausea, diarrhea, alternated with constipation, fatigue, increased risk of infection, lack of appetite, weight loss. I mean, you're like, wow, that doesn't sound good at all. But what you're seeing is that these dogs are doing pretty well. And I was talking to Amanda about it too, our daughter, and she was saying, yeah, I agree with Dr. Jasek. I don't think that they would have to come off a raw diet seeing that their spleen is being taken out.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the other thing, you know, to think about is when you hear all these potential side effects, well, what have those dogs been eating? You know, they've been on kibble diet, so they're malnourished to begin with, and they're not healthy. And then you take out a major organ, they're going to be a lot sicker. You know, so the kibble fed over vaccinated dogs, that's what most vets are used to seeing. So that's where these lists of side effects are going to come from. If we're supporting the pets with healthy diets and healthy whole food supplementation, they're going to do a whole lot better.
Yeah. So I asked her, I said, you know, what happened that predicated, you know, this dog going in and getting his spleen taken out? And she said he wasn't eating. He was lethargic. He had some pale gums. There was no vomiting going on because a lot of times you're going to see that. But, and she said he was getting worse. So they went into the vet. Blood work showed significant increases in the lymphocytes from they've been doing this, study, the 2-week study visit prior to that. So they did an ultrasound and she said you could see a mass in the spleen. And she said, so she had lost 2 of her prior goldens to spleen permangio. Mm-hmm. And that they agreed that they needed to take out that spleen before it burst. Because if it does burst, then they're going to bleed out and die, right?
Well, they can have, I mean, yes, that is definitely a potential, a possibility. They can have bleeds that, are not fatal. And I've had clients that go either way. Some will get the spleen out once there's a mass identified, because that's a scary way to live, just knowing that your dog could at some point have a fatal bleed. But then we, you know, will jump in and support those dogs, and they will sometimes just have non-life-threatening bleeds where they'll get, you know, lethargic for a day or two, they lose a little blood, and then they can survive them. But it is it's a constant risk for having a fatal bleed.
Yeah. And I was like, wow, she lost 2 of her prior goldens to spleen hermangio. What would be happening that would be causing that? I mean, is that hereditary? Do you believe in the whole hereditary kind of thing with these type of issues? What do you think about that?
I mean, I think there can be a hereditary predisposition. I don't think that that the genes necessarily need to express. Like there's the whole concept of epigenetics where, you know, the genes don't necessarily have to express even if there's a genetic predisposition. So, you know, we do see trends where we tend to see certain health conditions more in certain breeds. So I think there can be a genetic predisposition, but I don't think that's a slam. Like I hear people say, oh, you got a golden retriever, you know, they're going to be, you know, dead from cancer by the time they're 6 years old or something. I mean, I don't think it's that cut and dried, but I would definitely be looking at what else could be going on that's causing cancer in that household. So if they're on, you know, a good diet and they're not over vaccinating, I'd look at other toxins. Do they walk where there's glyphosate sprayed, you know, pesticides, herbicides, you know, EMF, you know, I think that can be a huge toxicity, you know, or pets, you know, being exposed to, you know, routers and cell phones and computers. And so I think you have to look at all sorts of things. Is there a 5G tower? You know, now that's a thing, you know, in the area where you're living with your pet. So I think you have to look at all those things and what are stressors. So you could have a genetic predisposition, but then something has to push that over the edge. And I would say it's probably some sort of toxicity. I mean, it's easy to identify, you know, potential toxicities on pets that are eating kibble and been getting lots of vaccines and other pharmaceuticals. In a case like this, I think, you know, it's more likely something more environmental. And you just have to look at everything. Water, are you using filtered water? If you're feeding or using, you know, city water, tap water, that there can be all kinds of stuff in there that you don't want your dog to have.
Yeah. And this particular dog is 11 years old. So done very well with this dog. But he also was recently diagnosed with chronic lymphomatic leukemia and has a mast cell tumor where they are injecting it with Stelfonta. So we've talked about mast cell tumors before and just kind of leaving them alone. What is Stelfonta?
I think it's injected like right around the mast cell tumors, but I'm not sure exactly what's in it, but I, you know, again, I'm leery of new pharmaceuticals until they've been out there for a while. And honestly, I find mast cell tumor, especially the, you know, like the external, the ones that are just in the skin, I find them to be so treatable and they do so much better without any conventional intervention that I just haven't, you know, bothered to look into any other treatment options, because if we support the immune system and keep the dog healthy and they don't have surgery to remove them. I mean, the worst cases of mast cell tumors I've seen where they've really blown up and caused a lot of problems for the dog are the ones that have had multiple surgeries. You just kind of leave them there and support the immune system, do things to help, you know, modulate the immune system so it stays active, but not overactive. Then I think we can treat that real efficiently. I think it's interesting in this dog that it has mast cell and then this form of leukemia too, because those are all sort of, you know, sort of aberrations of normal immune system function. So I would just wonder what this dog might have been exposed to that set that off. But I'd be really suspicious of some sort of environmental toxin.
She said over the years, he's never been on heartworm or flea and tick. So that's great. She does do essential oil sprays, but she said he's been on antibiotics about 5 to 6 separate times for a few different issues, including mange mites, and some dental work. And then in 2017, he did have surgery to remove a extra
medullary, maybe.
Thank you. Plasmatoma. Just help me. You went to school.
Maybe plasmacytoma.
Thank you. That's okay. It. Yeah. How do I learn how to pronounce these words?
Well, you have to go to doctor school. That's what they teach us. You don't know medicine. You just have to know how to say the big words. And then people believe you because you can say all these words that they can't pronounce. They don't know what they are. It's like, what's supposed to be a smart person?
All right. So you got that. So she had, so this particular dog had to have surgery. This poor guy had to have surgery to remove that extramedullary plasticoma. So what is that? What is that?
Extramedullary is referring to the bone marrow. So, but extramedullary would mean outside the bone marrow. And plasmacytoma, plasma cells, I mean, that's another form of like a white blood cell. And so there's just something really messed up with this dog's like bone marrow and white blood cell production. There's like a whole, some big like aberration of normal blood cell formation and immune system function.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then I did ask her about, you know, vaccines, because I think, you know, we're kind of looking at just vaccines in general and what the issues are when we see dogs that have vaccines, right? Mm-hmm. So initial puppy shots for parvo, distemper, rabies at 6 months, then another rabies. So that was 2012, then another rabies in 2016, then another in 2019. So has never had a lepto. That's good. And no further parvo or distemper vaccinations, which you would need.
Stelfonta, I pulled up their website. And so I was just looking at the safety. So human safety, accidental self-injection of Stelfonta may cause severe wound formation. So sedation of the dog might be necessary. So pretty serious. But then for the dogs, it sounds like what this does is it just sort of like breaks down the tumor. Mm-hmm. But then it says always administer a corticosteroid or H1 receptor blocking agent, which is an antihistamine, when treating. Oh, and yeah, and H2 receptor and famotidine when treating with Stelfonta to decrease potential for severe systemic adverse reactions, including death from mast cell degranulation.
Ouch.
Do not inject Stelfonta into subcutaneous mast cell tumors located above elbow or hock. This may result in accumulation of necrotic debris in subcutaneous space, increasing the risk of systemic adverse reactions, including death. I don't know. They're mentioning death a lot in this label. So I'd be very hesitant to use this.
I was like Dan Bongino. He says, don't get dead. That's his motto. Don't get dead.
Getting dead's not a good idea.
I know. You know, I do think that these mast cell tumors, they freak pet parents out. You know, they see them and it just really, really bothers them that they're there. But if they're not, as you say, causing issues with urinating, defecating, eating, I mean, I suppose that dogs could pick at them.
Honestly, I have seen it just very, seen them to be very, very manageable, especially these small skin ones. You know, we support the immune system with all the things we do in the diet, and they'll go up and down. They're the one tumor type that they'll get bigger and smaller. And we just watch them do that. And I've seen many go away. You know, we just treat them. I'll sometimes do ozone injections underneath the mass and we support them systemically because cancer is always a systemic disease and they really do well. But the more that people get surgery on these and get them removed, it just blows them up. They're just a very, very reactive type of tumor.
It's like they're saying, I'll get you, my pretty. Watch this.
Exactly.
You think you're going to get rid of me? I'm going over here.
And I'm
going
to send my buddies. I'm going to send my buddies to take hold somewhere else or just regrow right here now that, you know, we've got a bunch of scar tissue from the surgery.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now I've heard that turkey tail is a good thing for these tumors. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I like turkey tail for all types of cancer. I recommend it. I mean, I think turkey tail and the other mushroom immune blends can be very helpful at supporting and stabilizing immune system function. And then also we were talking about quercetin before. Quercetin is known to help stabilize mast cells. So I always recommend that a pet with a mast cell tumor be on something like quercetin too. Even if cancer does show up, you know, and you're doing it everything right that you can think of and cancer does show up. I mean, I think there are just, you know, we live in a toxic world and there can be environmental toxins, but remember that your dog still probably would be in a whole lot worse shape if you weren't doing all the things you're doing. So yeah, it sucks that it shows up, but your dog's going to have a much better chance of being able to manage it. We're going to have much greater success in supporting it because of all the things you have been doing. So it's not a waste to do those things, even if something, you know, like cancer shows up. People, you know, I hear this all the time. People are just amazed at how much better their dog feels and looks, and they have more energy when they're on a raw food diet as compared to the kibble diet. So don't discount that. I know there's a lot of propaganda out there, but look at your dog. You know your dog better than anybody. And if your dog is thriving and just looks fantastic, that should be the most important thing that you're basing your decision on, not a bunch of, you know, propaganda about, you know, your dogs need grains because of, you know, to prevent heart disease and things like that. And you really have to question where the information is coming from and what's the agenda behind it and who's making money off of that information. Because a lot of times that's just what it comes down to. It's just, it's a profit game. And that's what these big corporations are. That's all they're interested in, is making money.
That's really sick. It's really sick.
It's really sad.
All right, everybody, work with Dr. Judy Jasek. Get a second opinion. Let her look at your blood work. Give her the information that you've seen. Listen to an alternative way that you could go, whether that's going to be on mast cell tumors, whether that's going to be on no-sodes versus vaccines, whether that is going to be on herbs versus pharmaceuticals, right? So there's so many different ways you can go against, bless you, that we want to make sure that we're keeping the toxins out of your dog and we're feeding a species appropriate diet, all right? Super easy. We can make it easy for you right here at Raw Dog Food and Company. Go over and work with Dr. Judy Jasek. Her website is ahavet.com. And here at Raw Dog Food and Company, we're going to help you if you're confused. Hit that I am confused. I'm losing it button. And we're going to jump in there.
I'm going to have to go over there some more because I get confused all the time. So if you can help me with my confusion, man, that'd be awesome.
We'll sit down with a cup of coffee. Let me be your couch consultant here, Dr.
Okay. Be my anti-confuser.
Yeah, anti-confuser. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Send us your questions. We'll answer them next week with Dr. Judy Jasek. Go to Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Oh, snaps.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.